Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio from the Venice Festival. From the Giornata degli Autori section, I'm here with Karim Aynouz. Good morning.
Good morning.
The president of the jury of the Giornata degli Autori, they just have decided what they preferred, which is, just make this kind of...
which is a movie called La Llorona by Jairo Bustamante. A fantastic director from Guatemala.
From Guatemala, I know. I met him in Berlin for Tremblores.
Oh, Tremblores now, yeah. This year.
Yeah. And so, briefly, what made you choose this film?
Listen, it was a choice of all. I mean, I think it was 20 votes for 13. We had three finalists. And the two most voted films was Ladrona and a movie from Poland called Corpus Christi. And talking about me, I mean, the jury has different opinions. It was a very beautiful jury. I think it is such an important... I mean, it's a very haunting film. I think it's interesting because it has the same name of a song that I absolutely adore, that Chavela Vargas, a fantastic Mexican singer, sings. I think more than anything, I think it's... It does something to you as a viewer that, in my opinion, is like what music does. You know, it touches you somewhere that you don't know exactly what it is. It's not about... It's really a haunting film. It's really a well-crafted film. But beyond all of this, I think it's a necessary film. You know, I think it's a film that's talking about the Guatemalan genocide, which has not happened now. The main character, the main character is La Llorona, this ghostly presence that comes back to haunt this general that was responsible for this genocide. And I think it's necessary because, despite of talking about the past, I think it's also talking about all these extreme dangerous governments that are popping up in different countries of the world, particularly in Latin America. So, you know, it's fantastic when a movie can combine poetics with politics, you know. Yeah. It's like a good... when a good song does that, it's really unique, and that's what I think this film does.
Well, actually, politics are present in any single movie of the Mostra this year, in a way or the other. Yeah. And it seems like cinema is becoming, again, a political mean of communicating ideas. Yeah. You think so?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, for me, depending on where you come from, cinema has always been very political. Yeah. It's a way to shout. It's a way to shed light on things that are not, you know, exposed. It's a way to celebrate things that are under-celebrated. And it's a way to challenge a sort of average way of looking at the world. So for me, coming from Brazil, I mean, this has been there since the first short film, you know. Yeah. It's really interesting because I don't even think we have the choice. We can't just make entertainment. It would be a lack of responsibility because, you know, with the reach that cinema has... But it's fantastic to hear that this is the tone of the festival this year, because I think we're going through very complicated times. And I think that cinema can do it with a lot of strength, but with a lot of grace, with humor, with poetry. I think that cinema can actually be an amazing... I mean, thinking about of what's happening in the world, not only about what's happening with the climate, what's happening... with a lot of extreme right governments are being elected. I think cinema has this power of reaching people.
Well, you know, I met Nadine Labaki last week, and she told me that for her, her mantra is that film is a tool that can change the society. So she always keeps this in mind when she shoots, which is exactly what we see around.
No, and I think it's also, there's no better way to convince somebody of something through a story, you know, and I think that, you know, storytelling is such a powerful means of creating dialogue, of spreading, you know, a new vision of the world. And I think, yes, cinema, and I think this is how I started to make films, you know, I thought that that was a great way to have an impact on the world.
Well, you started in 2000, your first feature film. Was in 2002, Madame Satah. There was the Cannes Festival, and then it basically went around the planet, all over the place. And now we saw you in Cannes again this year after 15 years with The Invisible Life of Eurydice Gusmão. And those two films are completely different, of course, but there is like kind of a trademark, a kind of a new trademark in terms of vision and of visual quality to me. Do you feel to have a trademark? Do you notice consciously to have a trademark?
No, you know, like, I think there's two things about what I've been doing. This is my seventh feature. I've done a TV series in the meantime. I've done a few documentaries. I prefer to not think about that. I prefer to look, because the problem is, I think every film has its own DNA, you know? I think every story has its own needs, you know? And I think that we need to be humble to it, you know? I think that we need to actually understand. So, for example, I think there might be things that are common, you know, in all the films so far, but I think, for me, I look at every film as a new adventure, you know, as a place that I can also learn, you know, because the worst thing is to be repeating yourself and to be in a place where you're comfortable. I think for me, filmmaking and making a film is always a new adventure, you know, a new adventure should have. Yeah. So I think there might be things that are there, and I'm happy that you say that you noticed that. But when I'm making them, I'm just really surrendering to what needs to be, to what's best for the film, you know.
I mean, I was being mainly the look of it.
Yeah.
And when I saw the first like 10 minutes you were this, to say, okay, this is a Karim's film. There is no way that it's not his.
Yeah.
Because you have a kind of sensibility about colors, about the feeling the image, which is pretty yours. In Pride of Futura, there was a more like somber film, darker film. Still there, some visual quality was popping up.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because if I could be born again, I think I would be born a painter.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just incredible how somebody can translate the world through their hands and through image and through paint. And I think that this is something very important when I'm making a film. You know, it's basically, when you talk about the visual aspect of the film, I think I'm, you know, film is 50% sound and 50% image, you know, and the combination of that is poetry. So I think that I'm always doing research when I begin a film, and what is the image that it needs, you know, how we can shoot it. And it's interesting, because this is the first feature film I do that is in digital. I've always shot in analog, you know, so I'm also very used to the palette of analog, and I think that those choices, when you used to do analog, they really needed to be thought about, you know. It was not something that you could do after when the film was done. So I'm just very interested in how to translate visually, you know, the story, the character.
And how was it, how was it for you in preparing the film for a digital shooting instead of a film shooting? Was it, did you make changes?
I did. You know, I'm very interested in I began making films with Super 8, and I don't know why I'm still very attracted to Super 8. And then I started to think, I think it's because you can, you know, it's like seeing an impressionist painting. You can make up the dots, you know, like you can fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
Your imagination somehow fills in the blanks. And I think that's, first of all, it creates an active spectatorship. And second of all, it is just more mysterious, you know, that you don't know everything that's in the image. So for me, that's really the beginning of it, which is how to create mystery and how to engage the spectator on something that can also be a part of. So on digital, that's quite complicated. What we have in film is actually grain, you know, so you have more grain and less grain. And when they started to make this film, there's two things I thought about. I was working with a fantastic GOP who has actually worked a lot in Italy, called Hélène Louvard. She's French. And the first thing I said, how can we break the resolution? You know, despite the fact that digital, it's all about getting the resolution. Like, how can we break the resolution without having it pretend it wants to be film? You know, so two things we did. We used lenses that are lenses that have very particular resolution. I was looking for very old lenses that had not been repaired, you know. So we really found these amazing Russian lenses from the 1960s, actually. It was very hard to find, because every one of them had been repaired, so the image could be cleaner and you know.
Yeah, of course.
So this is one thing. And the other thing that we did was, how do we break the digital? I mean, the digital is about resolution. How do you break resolution? The lenses, the optics, but also with noise, you know. I mean, noise is what everybody hates about digital, because it's too much noise. And I said, listen, let's put all the noise we can, because then the image will be very alive. You know, noise is something that's almost flickering.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really trying to find what the medium has and how to use it for your own advantage, you know. But I think ultimately for me, with creating mystery and creating something that you don't fully understand, I have an eye problem as well. So I never see the world in focus. I have I think I have 70% vision. So I think maybe this is something that is in the films. You know, I'm very interested about not understanding everything I'm seeing and not actually deciphering, which is the very opposite of 4K or 8K or, you know, all that.
But actually, now that you say that you did this kind of work, Eurydice has a kind of visual is as a dense vision. You know, the images are dense, are more thicker. I don't know how to say it. More than all the other digital films you see, which are very defined and very clear and very precise, but slightly less deep, with less depth of colors, especially the blacks. You know, the red, the primary color are less defined.
I think it's the question of transparency. Yeah. I think there's something about the opaqueness of the image, and also its sort of rugged texture that I think it's, you know, I'm always thinking about the skin, you know, and human skin, you know, and I think that my films, they are, if anything, they're really, besides being stories, they're really portraits of characters. So the body of the characters are the most important thing, the way that you film it, the way that they're covered or uncovered. And I think I'm always, my main worry about when I'm shooting a film is how am I translating the texture of skin and what skin, you know. So for example, in Madame Satan, it was very important to translate contrast. You know, this is a very contrasted character. Yeah. And I think on this movie, there was a sense of a velvetness, you know, that these women had on their skin. You know, that was something, these are young women. There was something there that I really wanted to translate throughout the whole picture. And I think when you talk about the thickness is this, I think when you break down the image, when you have something that it's flickering with the image, you know, this idea that you can pierce an image that you have with digital, I think for me it was the opposite here. I think this image needed to pulsate, like, you know, like a heart is pulsating, like a heart, and I think that's the thickness that you're probably talking about.
I wanted to close our conversation talking about the issue of a book adaptation. Because the film was adapted by a very famous book. So how difficult was it, and which is, on your opinion, the main rule to follow when you adapt a book for a film?
Listen, it's a tricky one. I mean, in one hand, it's so exciting to adapt from a book because, you know, the architecture is there, you know. I'm an architect by training, and it's almost like you build something and the structure is there, you know. So you don't have to spend years trying to do the calculation of how the story is going to stay, you know, who's going to stand up. So in one hand, it's a gift, and it takes much less time, at least on my experience, than to build an original story. There's also something which is really fantastic, like there's so much research to do a book, there's so much thought when an author is writing a book that the characters are very there, you know? And talking about this, on this case in particular, since it was the first time, I think there was something which was fantastic, which is I call the DNA of the characters, but the soul DNA, but also the body DNA. There's something there that was a fantastic starting point. And the book is always about, you know, even if it's, no matter how long is this novel, it's always, there's a center of gravity about it, which is either the main theme or the main sensation. So that's there as well. And I think that's what I try to keep. Otherwise, you know, when you choose something, I think these are the reasons you choose it. Then there's this question of plot, you know, and on this case in particular, like, how do you translate plot? The novel it takes place in about during 70 years, you know, 1939, 1950, 60. How do you do that in 2 hours? You know, you have to change actors constantly to do that. You have to jump in time. And I think those are things that, you know, are not very audience friendly. You know, this is something that's generally very hard to follow. It becomes a bit cold, you know. So here was, how can I, you know, the question of dramatic time and the compactness of dramatic time was something super important. And also the story, you know, like in the book, you know, basically this is a film about two sisters that, you know, are separated and they spend their lives looking for each other. And in the book, for example, there's something super simple, you know, one of them, it would be just easy for them to find each other in the book because it's resolved in one paragraph. She says, the author says, so Eurydice spent 20 years looking for her sister. Every time she would go out of the house and look in the streets, she would be looking for Gida. I mean, that's 6 hours of a movie, right? You know, that's like a detective plot. So how do you translate that? So the question, how do you translate that, but how do you make this a plausible cinema plot, but yet how do you don't lose the main essence of the book and still, and how are you loyal to the characters? You know, I think this is the most important thing.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks a lot to Karim Mahmoud for this fantastic and interesting chat with us. He was here as president of the jury of the Giornata degli Autori, so he just told us which movie won. And we are happy to be the first to know. And thank you very much again, Karim. I'm Angela Cerbi for Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.